All right, everybody, welcome back to Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. I'm your host, Jordan Prince, and this is the 12 Songs for 12 Friends Breakdown, Part 4. So last week we talked a little bit about tracks 8 and 9, Cruise Street, which is one of the two interludes with the voices of the people that the songs are about, and number 9, Count on Me, which is the song for my friend Bruno. So onwards to number 10, which is for me one of the more important, it's hard to say which songs are more important than others because that would include some sort of bias, which for this track, for this album, I really don't have any bias as to what song feels more important or I think the only bias I might have is coming from a musician's perspective, like which, you know, performance or style of the song came out the best that it could. And there's definitely it's the plural of biases. There's definitely some biases there. Like for example, track 11, Great Big Light, it just wasn't quite the song that I, intended it to be in the end. But, all the other ones, I mean, I just love them. So anyway, let's go on to number 10, important in the way that, I was kind of looking forward to getting to this song, and there's another one later, number 13 that I'm interested in getting to, but, where will we go from here? This song is for and about my friend Cody Hopper. And I actually, you know, our journey sort of trickles through other songs on this album in a way, because, you know, his voice is on Cruise Street. He's the guy who was with Shannon in her story from track 6, High's Cool. You know, that whole jealousy story that came from Cody. And then later on track 13, Far Too Thin, you know, Cody and I were the ones who I think, I don't know, out of a small group of maybe 5 or 10, really developed into the people that we, or started becoming who we were always going to be because of Top Shelf Records. And I'm going to get into all that later. But, oh my God, Jordan, stay on track. So where will we go from here? This is a song for my friend Cody, and it's one of, I believe it's the only person for the album who ended up coincidentally getting 2 songs. I think at some point I'm going to properly record and release Cody's other song, which was the original draft for this album. But for some reason, I went with this one. I think because lyrically it's stronger, and I think because musically it's more intimate. And there is sort of a beauty in my nostalgia feeling for the times that I've spent with Cody, especially during high school. I'll just look at the lyrics here. We can go down in a row. So the first line is, wasting our time, sharing a mind full of dreams. I really liked just how the smooth, short thing of wasting our time, sharing a mind full of dreams. You know, we're both extremely aspirational people. We were both at the time very much black sheep in this town. Hyper creative. We were passionate about music and film to an extent that we didn't really fit in with a lot of people in town. We were these hyper, you know, nerdy people who were hungry for bigger cities and hungry for a bigger world and more culture, more art, more experience, and you just can't get that in this little Mississippi town. Wasting our time, we played so many funny games at my house. We would always sit up in my bedroom with my strobe light and blast, I don't know, Red Hot Chili Peppers or something, and like do a dance video, like way before TikTok, on my old DVD handycam. And no, sorry, I didn't even have a DVD handycam. I had tape. I had a digital camcorder, but it recorded onto small tapes, which is crazy that, sorry, I have hiccups and I have a sore throat and I have a cough. So this is going to be a very exciting episode for the sensitive listeners out there. Sorry, there it is again. Damn it! Wasting our time sharing a mind full of dreams. Yeah, I felt like we were very much the same kind of person. Oh my God, let me try and get rid of these hiccups. Hold on. Gonna try and do the whole hold your breath, drink something. Excuse me. Apologies. You're wondering, why didn't he edit that out? Why didn't he stop recording and get rid of the hiccups and then come back to recording and we be none the wiser? Well, like I've said before, I don't pull back the curtain on this show. This is the raw deal, people. I felt very much like-minded with Cody. We were really drawn to each other in a way, probably very much in love with each other. Not in any sort of physical, crossing it over into anything romantic, but in love with just who the person was, and I still feel that way. The next line is chat and a smoke riff on a joke endlessly. So endlessly rhymes, this a slant rhyme with dreams. So you have wasting our time sharing a mind, there's your A rhyme, full of dreams, B. Then chat and a smoke riff on a joke, there's your B. And then with endlessly, which rhymes back with dreams, that's your C. And then endlessly in dreams is back to your B. Whatever, it rhymes. And I'm just proud of how it came out. Chat and a smoke riff on a joke endlessly. So yeah, Cody and I mean, we would talk late nights on the phone for hours. We would watch a movie. Top Shelf Records had this film rental deal back during the hype of Movie Gallery and Blockbuster. There was Top Shelf. It was this small store in my hometown, which I will be talking about a lot and often do. And they had 7 movies for $7 for 7 days. Unbelievable. And Todd had an eclectic collection of films in this little shop. He had all the new releases. If the new, Mission Impossible or, James Bond came out, yeah, he'd go get 7 or 8 copies and rent that. But he also had just a crazy collection of really, really interesting, artistic, cultured, foreign, documentaries and indie films and winners of the Cannes Film Festival and the Toronto Film Festival and Sundance. And that's where I discovered all these incredible movies, Blow Up, also Blow, which is also a great movie, but Blow Up or Breathless or Sexy Lucia and Buffalo 66, Little Miss Sunshine, Thank You for Smoking. I don't know. I mean, just everything that isn't a top summer blockbuster hit, he had it. And so you really just get into this crazy urge of what is this? I've never seen this before, never heard of this before. And you would spiral down these crazy paths of interesting, Wim Wenders and, what's his name from Melancholia and Antichrist? Lars von Trier. And he had Almodovar and he had, David Lynch, he had all these really amazing, and Michel Gondry, this journey of just amazing filmmakers from around the world. And that really opened up my eyes to I've never seen Hitchcock. Let's go watch all the Hitchcock movies that Todd has, And so, Cody and I would, chat about all these movies and talk about all these movies a lot. And stand at the gazebo downtown near the train tracks and just stupidly smoke cigarettes, after or whatever, during our lunch break or after work at this furniture store, and riff on a joke endlessly. I mean, that's quintessential what we are. That's what our friendship is. That's what Cody and I always we're known for. I mean, that's what I think about the most in terms of just the fun things we did was, we would never let a punchline end. And if we hang out today, it still happens sometimes where you think of a funny scenario based on something someone said, and then it escalates and escalates and escalates until you just can't do anything else with it, until we just beat it to death. And sometimes you just get the most hilarious things that you can never explain to somebody. And I love that. And so then it goes into the first chorus. Where will we go from here? I don't know, but we're on a roll and I'm not afraid. So not a really clear rhyme pattern here, but it works with the melody. And interesting enough, I always felt like this song came out very gospel-y. I feel like this song would be easily played in a church if you had different lyrics. You know, this main thing with the piano, let me find it here. You know, like, I feel like that could be played while people are being called down to the altar in a church. And everybody, please put your hands in the air. Turn to Psalm 52. If you're feeling the Lord in the house today, please don't shy away. Accept Christ in your hearts. Come on down the aisle. Got Brother Carl here. He's going to lead you to salvation. Got Sister Catherine. It's going to take you down. You know, it's like, I don't know. It just feels so churchy. And maybe that stems from being raised in church, being raised in a Baptist church. You had these kinds of old-fashioned hymns that you'd sing all the time. And some of them I really liked, like, when the roll is called up yonder, 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 I'll be there. That's so old, you know? It's from forever ago. And, like, that kind of music also kind of seeped into movies like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which my parents loved. We watched that a million times. And maybe that stuff is kind of why Where Will We Go From Here has this sort of churchy sound. It is like church, you know? And we came from a very small southern, very highly Christian town. Everybody we knew, everybody's family went to church, whether it was Methodist or Baptist or whatever. But everyone went to church. So it kind of makes sense to me if I reflect on it that way. And the lyrics in this chorus are really straightforward. You know, where are we going to go from here? Our friendship has been through so much. And now, you know, at this point I had already lived in New Orleans for years. So we had a lot of separation already. Then, you know, I wrote this record when I wrote Cody's song on a vacation. This will sound so pretentious, but it's still, like, for me, a really great memory. I wrote Cody's song on someone else's guitar on a vacation in France, like my only vacation that I've ever, my only time really in France was on this vacation with Efi's family. And I was just, you know, everyone wanted to do their own thing. It was just one of those afternoons. Oh, you guys are going to read and take naps by the pool. You guys want to play Settlers of Catan. I'm not into board games. I don't really want to read right now. What I want to do is I want to play music. And so, you know, somebody brought a guitar, as sometimes people do that on vacations. They'll just, you know, bring an old acoustic in the back of the bus. And I had it sitting on this sofa on the second floor of this rented house, looking out over the hillside at the ocean. And it was just so beautiful and, like, mystical and so European and sexy and just, like, so alive and wonderful and calming, very calming. And this melody came, this dum, 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 da, da, dum. And I don't know, somehow that's where Cody's song came. And I wrote the whole thing there on that couch in that one sitting. I'm pretty sure. Or I had most of it at least. And it just, yeah, so I had moved to New Orleans. Now I've already moved to Germany for years. Where are we going to go from here? I don't know. But hey, you and me, we're on a roll. We're doing great. We still talk all the time, and I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of what's going to change or what's going to happen, because I'm not worried about, you know, if we can handle this much distance, we can handle anything. So that's definitely kind of the key message of that. Next verse is showing up late every place that we go, which this line, showing up late every place that we go, is sort of just a tool I'm using. It's not as if Cody and I really always showed up late to everything we did. Yeah, sometimes we were late for work at the furniture store because we would screw off in the delivery trucks and go, I don't know, do something stupid. And sometimes we showed up late for work. Sometimes we worked two different jobs together. Like, Cody got me a job at two different places One was the first Sweet Peppers deli that I worked at. I worked at a second one, which was like awesome in Louisiana. But the first one was in our hometown. He got me a job there. It was a deli. I worked the front counter. And we were so obnoxious as a duo that they stopped scheduling us together. And we didn't get to work together too much after that. And then Cody left there. I worked there a bit longer. And then he was across the street at Casabella Furniture, which is no longer there. And he got me a job there because it was more money and it was not making sandwiches and using the cash register. And this was a very labor heavy job. Like we kind of like had to put on the tough, this sort of tough image every once in a while. You know, we worked with like these dudes, just like these gruff dudes. One of which was this guy named Chad Jolly, who is an enigma that I will never be able to understand. He's like this beautiful mind, like, I don't know, this needle in a haystack type of person who's got such a broad and vast understanding and memory about film and culture and art and music. And he's got good taste and he's got such a photographic memory for these types of things. And he's hilarious, like very well-crafted jokesman. But there he was, just some like big, tall, brute force, you know, delivery truck manager. And it was just like, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? You should have a much different job. And he, you know, he loved his wife. They were very sweet to each other. And she worked at the front of the building at the sale on the sales floor. And anyway, besides him, we worked with these really just tough, gruff dudes, Ray and Skeet and Art Boogie and Carl. That's a whole different story, man. Carl. Oh man. Okay. I can't. We showed up late, but I'm using this line as sort of a rhyme. It's a truth, but it's also not so important because I'm using it to get to the next line, which is all of the tapes, Drew and the plays we put on. So showing up late every place that we go, all of the tapes, Drew and the plays we put on. So I wanted to have a play on words and I wanted it to rhyme again the same way. And that's why that first line's really there. But all of the tapes, that refers to, yeah, I had this, you know, digital to tape sort of camera, which is crazy that and my mom still had it the last time I visited. One of the last times I visited. And what we did was I took all the tapes, I gave them to a friend in New Orleans who digitized them, who watched all of them, digitized them to a Google Drive file. And then I took some of the best moments to my friend Bruno, who I mentioned in the last episode, and he and I cut the video for my song Simple Swimmer to these tapes. So actually, if you want to see, I mean, we really screwed with the footage. We put a lot of effects on it and cut it all funky and weird to make it interesting. But if you want to see the footage, some of the footage from my teen years with Cody in my high school, in my childhood home, you can actually go to my YouTube and watch the video for Simple Swimmer. Funny. It's so weird, but I love it. I'm so glad I used that footage for that. Drew, just the name Drew, and only a couple of people would even know who I'm talking about when I just say that one name. That's why really the attention to detail on like how specific these songs are to the people is so, it was so much work. some people don't really see that, but it was a lot. Drew is, of course, referring to a singer-songwriter that you should definitely go listen to a couple of his albums, at least, I can recommend on Spotify. His name is Drew Danbury, D-A-N-B-U-R-R-Y, Drew, D-R-E-W. Drew Danbury, huge inspiration for me and Cody in a certain phase of our teen years. He was just somebody that we thought was going to blow up. In retrospect, when I go back and listen to his music, it doesn't have the same professional quality that I thought it did when I was a teenager, but it's still special. It's still its own thing. And he's changed his sound a lot over the years and made a lot of different decisions about what kind of music he wants to do and stepping out of the spotlight and having a family and all these things. But Drew Danbury for a while was this young guy from Utah, And he was like the definition indie musician for us. And we idolized him. We had all of his CDs. We like always got everything. The moment that it came out, we always searched and Googled like, oh, he's got a new YouTube video. Oh, he has a new song. And we were lucky enough that, you know, one time he toured twice in my hometown, which should have been, that should have been a cue for me that he wasn't like a huge artist, because the first place he played was the patio outside of a pizza joint. But for me, I was like, why aren't there 10,000 people here? This is unbelievable. And he played unplugged, and he played with a band also. I think this, I forgot the name of the band that toured with him. I think they played after or before him. And it was next to the train tracks. So occasionally the train would just like burst through their set and you couldn't hear anything anymore. And they would either stop or just like power through. And I filmed that on my little VHS camera. I filmed like the whole performance. And I would rewatch it. I would go home and I would watch the performance over and over. I think that was one of the rare times Cody could not be there with me. I think he had to work or he had something else going on. And then Drew Danbury also came back around another time a couple of years later when we had turned Top Shelf Records into half a record, half record DVD store, half music venue. We had finally convinced Todd and pushed him enough to let us play music there. And I was playing there like every other weekend. I had my acoustic sets there. I had my rock band there. I had another project with Cody, the Warehouse Junkies. And we had, which is like so obvious why we called ourselves that, working at a furniture store warehouse. And we had a lot of bands coming through. I was booking. I was helping Todd run the door sometimes. I was trying to help sort of like, I don't know. I felt very much responsible for that, for those things to go well. And thankfully, I don't remember there ever being too much of an issue. I think everyone paid their ticket. There was never any fights or anything. He didn't serve alcohol, so it didn't really, you know, it couldn't go crazy there. But man, we sold the hell out of those Jones sodas. I'll tell you that. I missed that. Oh man. I missed going to Top Shelf on a lunch break and getting myself a green apple Jones soda. Man, special times, special times. Anyway, so yeah, that's Drew. He's this musician who we idolized. He played in my hometown, and actually had some correspondence with Drew this year, I believe. Maybe it was late last year. No, maybe it was this year. Anyway, we had some correspondence with him, sort of out of the blue. I think I wrote him to see if he'd be interested in maybe he wrote, I think he wrote me to say that he enjoyed the album Simple Swimmer kind of randomly. And we started talking about maybe doing something together. I think we have some rough recordings we shared with each other, but nothing's come to fruition. But this year I had a real slow draw back into recording things, so let's see where that goes. But that's who Drew is. Played a big role in our teen years. And the last part of that line is, and the plays we put on. So, you know, we came up with sketches and characters. One of our most commonly recurring sketch ideas was that Cody Hopper was like this perfect super specimen. And that I, Jordan, this chubby teenager, was very confident but incapable of doing what he could do. Which says a lot about the jealousy that played between us at that age. Like, oh, I find this hilarious in sketch that Cody is a perfect person who can do everything right, and that I am this chubby loser who smacks his face into the side of Cody's Jeep or whatever. And then that sort of like applied itself subconsciously, I guess, into our real life situations when girls became like a part of our real life. And yeah, that's when that was like this. That's what this next verse is all about. But I'll get there in a second. Then the next chorus is again, where will we go from here? I don't know, but we're on a roll, and I'm not afraid. And that's for me still tried and true to this day. So then the last verse here, I decided to strip all of the instrumentation away and leave just the vocal saying, "Huff and the war." Almost she tore us apart. So yeah, this was, I mean, really only part of this drama that probably, I don't even know if Cody knew as much about my little insecurity, jealousy, trauma shit that I was dealing with because of him being successful with girls who were cool girls. You know, it's not like Cody really did anything wrong. There was like, Huff is the last name of this girl who was, for a while, very good friends with both of us. However, the girlfriend of Cody. And I think the first stretch of years that I knew Cody, that was like this duo. It was like Cody and her. I guess Leanna. So like Cody and Leanna were a very cool couple. We did a lot of things together. We went like TPing houses on Halloween together. We all hung out at her family's house a lot. We kind of all developed relationships in a way, you know, with her little brother and stuff. Of course, Cody with a much more closer relationship with them because he's the boyfriend. That's not where the jealousy comes in. But yeah, there was like this time where I think they weren't doing so. This part's foggy for me, honestly. I think towards the end of their relationship, they weren't doing so well. And I don't know if Cody and I were having a fight or if we just had a dip in things, because naturally with Cody, like there was a time at Top Shelf where Leanna and I hung out a lot on our own as well. And I maybe gave myself the impression that Cody didn't like this, but maybe he didn't. And I understand if he didn't, because he could probably read me like a book, and inside, of course, I had a crush on Leanna. Now, I never did anything with Leanna, and I never crossed any lines, and I never told her anything like that. Like, and I mean, maybe it was obvious by sometimes how I looked at her or something. I don't know, but I never, you know, sat in the car alone and was like, "You can do so much better than that hopper boy." You know, I never like stabbed him in the back or anything with that, as far as I can remember. But I don't think so. But like, I don't know. I'm sure I wasn't very smooth or anything. But we hung out alone a lot, and there was a time where we were hanging out together, and she had told me her and Cody had started, like, you know, going to the next level physically in their relationship. And I remember I got so jealous. I took a Jones soda bottle and I threw it down the street, and then I got so mad because the bottle didn't shatter. It just bounced 3 times and went into a bush. How disappointing is that? You want to get that nice, like, but it was like, king kong, king, like into a bush. I was like, I can't even break glass. And so that was like these first little seedlings of jealousy. And then we get into where they're not doing so well. I don't know exactly the story, if it was like good until it wasn't, or if it was a slow decline. I cannot remember, honestly. But there was a time where I was hanging out with her a lot and they were not doing so well. And of course, part of me was like, well, maybe she'll date me next. But that was never going to happen. That was never on the table, you know? And I think there was this little weird thing between me and Cody about her, in the way that I was such a douche about maybe hoping that would be the case, instead of just trying to stay more in the middle and say, well, look, whatever happens here, you guys are both great, and I'm just your friend, and I'll support whoever's being hurt by the, you know, whatever, like, I'll support you both. I didn't. I was like, oh, maybe if they break up, Cody will find someone else because he's so good looking. And I'll get, maybe Leanna will see in me what I see in me with her. You know what I mean? So it was just this naive teenage crap. It's just teenage crap. And I'm sure I'm painting a much blurrier picture of this than Cody remembers. And I'm sure I'm not getting some things right here. But that was the general gist, was just like, this thing about Leanna was caused a bit of a rift between us, but only for a short time. And what's funny is, in Shannon's song, I talk about how this jealousy between, my jealousy, again, of Cody with a girlfriend of mine, Shannon, is the same problem, to the extent where I stayed up all night, fell asleep driving my car, and almost died. You know what I mean? Like, how far was I willing to go to drive a wedge between Cody and women? Like, that was never going to be successful. I should have learned how to accept myself and to love myself, but it took a long time. It took many more years. It took until college before I finally just naturally shed a good bit of weight. I think I was a freshman or sophomore in college, and I lost, I don't know, like 20 pounds or something crazy. And that's when I felt I maybe it was connected to that, but it was also just like I felt so proud and okay with being me. Like I had all these friends, and I don't know, it was a different world. It's like I don't specifically know why, but it was just like I had a lot more people who wanted to surround themselves around me, and I didn't have that in Mississippi. I had my core group, like ride or die, like Cody and Todd and Shannon in them, but it's something different just happens. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's hard to explain. Maybe you know what I mean. But I didn't love myself at the time, and that's what the problem was. That's what the problem was always between, if it was Cody with girls, is because I didn't love myself. And that is always usually the issue, is the person who's jealous or full of hate or angry or something is because they know that they don't have a chance here, and they should learn how to get their own... get themselves in gear and get their own girlfriend. You know what I mean? Or just be happy for their friend. Like, oh, that's awesome, man. Like, good for you. But instead I was like, oh, why is he doing this to me? So that's the general story of like Huff and the war. Almost she tore us apart. Although she could never really tear us apart. Come on. My fault then yours, the weight secrets bore on our hearts. I'm particularly happy with that line. I really like the weight secrets bore on our hearts. And that's all tied into that. You know, Huff and the war, almost she tore us apart. My fault and yours, the weight secrets bore on our hearts. Again, really just what I wanted was a very cool rhyme scheme here, the way that things dance on the tongue, the way they snake around each other, the way they bounce and the way they link up was very important to me. And also having the emphasis, like, on this Huff and the war, like this isolated vocal and then slamming back with the band. What people might notice is that on that final verse, the song changes from a 3-4 rhythm, like 1-da-da-ba-da-da, into 4-4, like d-d-cat, d-d-cat. We did that on purpose in the studio to give a super amount of weight, literal weight, to the lyric. So for example, it's like, and then it goes into Huff and the war. It totally changes beat there. Maybe it's better if I play it, idiot.
Huff in the war, almost she tore us apart.
Right back into 3-4. Yeah. And that's basically the track, lyric wise. And that's kind of what that stands for. You know, Cody had another song that I never released called, I think it's called Six Blocks, or what did I call it? What's the line is like? All the kids are Six Block Stretch downtown, and like Six Blocks, I think I'd call it Six Block Stretch, I'm not sure, but it was a much rougher, cool rock, like dirty indie rock song, with a cool melody and a fun riff about just like the grittier, sillier, dirtier things we did, like all the smoking and like, oh, drugs and like, oh, whatever, and like warehouse stuff. And it's really fun, totally different from this song. This song is like just a warm, like a very, very deep love letter to this person, admitting my own faults and realizing that if we can get through all that stuff and we can get through also the distance between us, that we can get through anything. And so far that's been very true. Since I started breaking down this album song by song on the podcast, I've sort of reignited some conversations with some of the people that these songs are about. I have a text group, of course, with a handful of the New Orleans people, naturally. But also, I have a group with Cody and Todd, and I've been also talking again to Shannon, which has been really nice. You know, when I covered her episode, I thought it was very fair to tell her, this is about you, and if there's anything I should correct, you should, you know, tell me. And I did. And then, you know, this one to be about Cody, and I know they've been listening, and that's really, really cool for me to feel that, like, we're somehow back all in the same room watching the same movie or, like, having the same experience in a way, because these days it's very hard to do that, it's hard to stay in touch. You have to make an effort, and thankfully these people are making an effort based around this album, and that really means a lot to me. Yeah, wasting our time, Shannon. I love this song. It's like a churchy, gospely love letter to Cody Hopper. Very proud of him. I'm so proud of him, what he's doing these days. You know, he always wanted to work in entertainment, the same as me. And we ended up doing pretty different things in it, which is kind of cool. I always thought Cody would be like an actor, or a writer. And now that I think about it, it makes a lot more sense that he's doing what he's doing, which is he does stand-up comedy. So he is writing jokes and he is performing under the spotlight, but under his own terms. You know what I mean? And he is a really, really funny guy. And then also working on film sets, but not in front of the camera. He's kind of, you know, the reliable gear guy most of the time. Like, he worked as a really reliable, consistent stand-in on, you know, Ozark, which was an amazing show. And he's worked on so many things, like the Spider-Man movies. And I'm so sorry, Cody, that I'm forgetting all the projects you've worked on right now. But he's worked on a lot of major Hollywood projects over in Atlanta, and that's just so cool. And he's on a project now, and you know, he's working the hard hours and you know, making decent money, and hopefully he can save up enough to come visit over here in Germany sometime. I would love that. Anybody who these songs are about, I would love to happily host. We've got room for you. It would just be a flight for you, my friend. Okay. So now we can get into what, and I hate to say it this way, I really do, but I think that this is the next song, number 11. I think it's my least favorite song on the album. Like, even lyrically, I'm just not very happy with this. I know that I wrote it on an acoustic guitar, as I usually do. That's how everything starts off. It started off on an acoustic guitar, and it was supposed to have a different feeling than it does on the record. Again, there's some songs from this recording where I took too much influence, I think, from the people around me that later I'd stopped working with, even, you know what I mean? There are some people who really support and help give fresh ideas to what you're thinking and totally accept if it's not what you're feeling. And then there's some people who believe with all their heart that that's the right thing to do. And hey, let's do it. Hey, we're already doing it. You know what I mean? And in this song, there was a lot of me being surrounded by a few people in that studio who took the lead on some things. And I just thought maybe they know best and just went with it. But that's not the entire reason why the song isn't great. The song isn't great because it's not a great song. Like, it's not a really well-written song. The lyrics aren't as great in retrospect. There's some nice things. We'll get into it. And then just production, I don't know. Let's see here. So the song is about, sadly, the only person on the album who isn't even a friend of mine anymore. Isn't that sad? And over the dumbest things, I found out later. So this is about my friend Ian. And Ian was a sound guy for television and film in New Orleans when the scene was super hot there. And he's a recording engineer and producer. And he had his own studio. And he was super nice, very intelligent. I thought he was, like, good looking, oddly vulnerable, oddly sensitive. not oddly in the way that it throws you off, but like you don't expect it until you get to know him, and then you feel so welcomed, and he's so complimentary. He can be so complimentary. And also, he's so passionate about conspiracy theories and like there being like a bigger, larger mind at work, sort of pulling the strings on everything. And I like this combination, like very smart, very technical guy, but also he like smoked a lot of weed. He loved sushi. His parents were Buddhists and he believed in aliens like to no end. And it's just an interesting person. And when I first visited back from Germany and visited New Orleans, like my very first visit back, he was the guy who like picked me up from the airport, drove me wherever I needed to go, asked me every day if I needed a ride, made a lot of effort. You know, like this was just like a good friend. He produced my 2015 or 16 EP Jordan Prince Band, which I stupidly released on its own Spotify and not just on my Spotify. Very stupid. So Jordan Prince Band, you can go listen to old songs like She's the Queen or Lie About Your Love. Lie About Your Love is actually the title track for this podcast, but we had my friend Tom Yanks remix it. So this guitar, this bling, 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 that's actually from a song that Ian Painter mixed, the original one. So anyway, old time, like all time listeners of this podcast will remember the original theme song. And that was from that EP. So Ian, yeah, all these things, great guy, good friend, nice relationship. And then it seems that around 2018, 2019, I want to say, he just really changed. Like, it wasn't just me, I found out, which I'm kind of glad for, but he dropped basically his whole circle. He left the industry. He went to go be a real estate agent. He moved. He sold his stuff. Like, he's in a totally different world mentally. I don't even know what he looks like anymore. I think he's on LinkedIn or something, but he's dropped everything. His socials is never changed. His friendships canceled, dropped, kicked everybody out. He had a pristine studio in this like awesome film warehouse that was like half green screen studio sound booth. It was like the, you know, many, many thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of worth of gear studio. Like you could shoot a movie there or like amazing music videos. And he had his own booth in there and like, I don't know, it's all gone. It's all over with. And it's kind of sad to see that end of that era. And I only hear things about him through gossip. I don't even know what's actually true. I just know that he is a real estate agent, but that's the most consistent thing that everyone says. But so this was the original lyrics for this song. And well, I'll finish that other story first, which is that, at some point everything ended. I thought that he stopped being my friend over a strange misunderstanding. I asked him to buy, at the time of our falling out, I was vaping tobacco, and there was a particular machine from America they didn't have in Germany, and in New Orleans at the smoke shops, you could get the flavors there for that machine, and I liked it, and I wanted him to mail me some, and I would pay him for it. So he bought me a second machine and a bunch of the pods, just so it would always be working and always be full. And he put it in the mail, and like a month later it got stopped at customs. I had to go out like over an hour to the edge of Germany and go to this customs office, and Ian unfortunately labeled everything correctly, which that's who he is. You know, he was like, of course, man, you're going to put it in there exactly as they want you to put it. But he labeled everything as like, you know, lithium batteries, because it was, you know, electronic. It was an electronic device. But it was a vape with no batteries in it. So basically it's plastic and some liquid, but everything was super, super wrapped. And he could have just not put that label on there because it isn't dangerous, but you know, whatever. So I'm at the customs office. I'm holding the box in my hand. I'm not allowed to take it. They take it back from me. They ship it back to Ian. And I'm so frustrated and so disappointed. He put all that money into it, all that time, all that effort. I waited forever. It traveled all the way out there. Nothing. Goes back to Ian another month later, and I say, okay, look, I know my friend Matt, and I know this guy, and I know this person. I know they vape the same machines. Instead of me paying you whatever it was, like $200 for something I cannot have, why don't you, or I can text these guys and say, hey, do you want to buy any of these flavor pods and stuff from Ian, from you, at a discount price on behalf of me? They can stop by your house, pick up like 20 pods or 10 pods, pay you half the price or 75% of the price, and then you get a lot of that money back yourself, and then I pay out the dividend. I pay out the difference. That way, I can pay you for your effort and for the trouble, but I don't have to spend all the money on all the stuff and not get it. I don't know about you out there, but I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that sounds totally fair. I'll make the effort to communicate with the people. I'll make the effort that they come to you. I'll make the effort that they spend, that it's less price for them so that they have initiative to buy more. They get it off of your hands. They give you the money, and then I pay the difference. So in the end, you still get everything back that you paid for, plus shipping, and I don't have to pay, you know, whatever $200+, which sometimes that happens with big packages. Well, at first it sounded like it was going to work. I got in touch with my friend Matt and I said, hey, go to Ian's, make sure to get a bunch of these pods, just buy them, you know, whatever. And then I never heard from Ian again, like full stop. I wrote Ian like a month after that and said, hey, did Matt ever come by? Did so-and-so ever come by? Have you heard from them? Because I was going to follow up and make sure that it happens, because New Orleans is full of a lot of people that say they're going to do things and then they never do them. And he never got back to me. And I said, hey, it's been another month. I just want to make sure we're cool. Let me know, please, if anyone is coming by and helping get these things from you. If they're not buying them, please tell me, because I want to make sure you get your money back. Like, I'm being very clear. If they are not buying it, I will give you the money. You still spent the money. You still don't want this stuff, and it's because of me. So if they don't buy it and help share the load of the cost, of course, it's not my first choice, but I will make sure you get your money back. And he still never responded. And I never heard back from him again, ever. And it has been years now. And that was where I started going home and talking to friends. I was like, where's Ian? What's going on with him? I wrote a song about this guy and he just disappeared out of my life. And they're like, yeah, he's a real estate agent. He dipped all of his friends. He disappeared. They're like, he does this. You know, sometimes he just does this. So it's crazy, right? So sad, man. Like it wasn't even like $1,000. It was like $200. And I just wanted to see if someone could... buy $100 worth of these products first. So he gets 100 from them and I give him 100 instead of me paying him 200 for things that I don't get to use at all or have. You know, I was just like, why? Why can't it be this way? Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But I think that's really a normal thing to try and negotiate with your friend. Because you always say, if it doesn't work, tell me and I'll make it good for you. But whatever. Maybe it wasn't about that deal at all in the end. But this is what the song is about. The song is about basically it's kind of a UFO conspiracy haunted house thing. It's basically like saying your conspiracies are true. I'm seeing what you're seeing and I'm waiting for us to be basically taken by the aliens. It's just that simple. So it says, take a look up at the sky. Just what is it that you see? Do you find yourself wondering just what's hidden underneath? And then the chorus, oh, I'm waiting on a great big light to lift us up into the night. Which I like the idea of this cryptic UFO image of the beam from the sky sucking you up into the clouds. And like, you know, I don't know if you saw this movie, Nope, but the first, 40 minutes are great, I think, before like the big monster reveal sort of. But like the first 30 or 40 minutes are great where you just have this like distant screaming in the sky and you have this shadow that moves and everything's very cryptic and sort of hidden and secretive. And I love that. So this was kind of that feeling I was going for. And then the next one is, are you seeing that there? Are you seeing that there portrait move? Which is funny that I put that in there, but are you seeing that portrait move? All the eyes follow down the hall. Of all the things that we'll never know, do you see what path we're on? So it's almost saying like, Are you seeing the lights in the sky? Are you seeing the portrait's eyes move in the hall? Like, there's so many things we don't know. Do you think we're learning the right things, going down the right path? Like, it's questioning also. Are you sure that this is the right thing to focus on? Should we really be taught, like, should we really focus on if JFK is still alive? Should we really focus on if aliens are in our universe? Should we really be focusing on, you know, Bigfoot or Loch Ness? Like, it's questioning these things. Like, I'm starting to obsess. I'm going down the wormhole with you. Like, should we be doing this? Is this right? Are we seeing the things in the sky actually? And then the last line, of course, again, after the bridge is, I'm waiting on a great big light to lift us up into the night. And the song is actually really fun. Like, it's a conspiracy theory, haunted house sort of song. And it has a sort of a fun rock riff to it. Let's get into it here. Maybe I'll skip the intro. Already hate it. I hate the vocal melody. I hate how whiny I sound. Hate it. Let me get to the part I like. Here we go. I love that synthesizer arpeggiator that Vivi put in there, this like you actually are being sucked up into the sky. And then there's this crazy bridge. That's Vivi deep in the back, like, I love those melodies that she comes up with. That's actually in the Lakeshore Drive interlude. That's one of the things that she says that she loves about our relationship, is that she has this memory of building a melody in our band Big Lemois and looking at me, and I whispered, like, I love it. Because I often do. She has unbelievably beautiful melodies in her brain. Yeah, so this song, you know, has a few moments like doom, this like sort of, I was going for a Belle and Sebastian track. What's a good Belle and Sebastian? I think, like, was it Books? No, not Booksmart. There's a Belle and Sebastian song I was trying to emulate here. What's the album? Forgive me here for a second. Come on. Was it not Boy with the Arab Strap? No. Not this one. I'm so sorry. This must be so annoying. Was it Third Eye Center? Oh yeah, it was Third Eye Center. I'm pretty sure. No wait, that's not true either. That just had a great song on it, but it wasn't what I was going for. It must be Dear Catastrophe Waitress. I think that's the album. Why is it so difficult? God, here we go. Okay, Spotify changed everything. It's so hard to get to the album. Yes, it's 2003's Dear Catastrophe Waitress. I was trying to copy, probably, was it this song? Not copy, but... And you can hear a similarity. This doom 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 wrapped up in Books is an amazing song from that album. And I was trying to go for that sound. That's the sound I was going for. Did it work? No. Are there little moments? Maybe. Were they original ideas of yours that you're so proud of? No. Some of the best ideas in that song are Vivi's ideas. And this, I have to say, and this may seem slightly controversial, but like this main bass riff, the intro of the song, I gotta say, it has not grown well on me. At the beginning, when I first heard it, I thought, oh, that's melodic, it's interesting, it's this like underlick under the vocal melody that you can hum along with. But I don't think the song is fast enough for that melody to work. And in fact, the way that it goes like 3-4 you know, this it almost feels like it's putting a hand in your chest. Don't go, you know, and it just stops the beat for me. And I've only noticed that as time has gone on. So it's like the main hook of the whole track, but yeah. So, you know, instrumentation, not my favorite. Lyrics, not my favorite. It's about somebody who, you know, gave up being a friend, you know, over nothing pretty quickly and with no resolution at all. And so it's not, you know, the happiest ending, but I'm going to have to wrap things up there. Unfortunately, the good news is on the next episode, I'm going to talk about two very important songs to me, as important as Where Will We Go From Here, which is Eye to Eye about Vivi, which would be a very in-depth story, and Far Too Thin, which is, of course, about the one and only amazing Todd Gurley, the father of Top Shelf Records. So don't go anywhere, guys. Listen, if you enjoyed today's show, please make sure in the show notes, there are our social media channels, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. Please go follow us. Tell a friend about this show, even just word of mouth or, you know, sharing a link or something via text helps us so much. I really want to try and grow this artsy fartsy family. So please, if you enjoyed this, if you like listening to this show, just share it one way or another, or make a comment or a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps the algorithm and helps new listeners find this show. It really means a lot. So please go do that if you enjoyed it. Thanks so much for listening, guys. I hate to wrap it up on this sour note, but I love you so much. Thank you for listening. We're going to have a great one the next episode. Much love to Cody Hopper. That one's for you. Be here next week. Bye-bye.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.